WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr, your ERP, integration, and automation specialists.
Today, we are joined by Joe Maruzzi. Hopefully, I said that right.
Yeah, not bad.
More or less. the CEO of Please, the world's first frozen cheesecake in a tub, in brackets. I don't have a sweet tooth personally, but you'll be happy to hear that cheesecake is my actual favourite dessert. I'm not just saying that for the sake of this video. It's basically the only dessert I eat. So yeah, I'm excited to obviously hear about your story, some of your challenges, and also try some of the cheesecake here.
Yes.
See if it lives up to the hype. And yeah, I'm excited for this one. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It's been an early start, but a couple of coffees and we're ready to go.
Yeah, same.
And some cheesecake on the way. Some sugar.
I hope it hasn't defrosted because it's in a fridge at the moment, which is not where it's meant to be. But
we'll try our best.
We've got a trusty assistant, Martin, who'll grab it for us. But yeah, we're good.
Before we get started, I'm going to say thanks to our sponsors, Souq, who do affordable pop-up space for retail brands. So we're going to get stuck right in. I thought a great place to start, especially after researching about Please and your journey a little bit, was the story behind the rebranding.
Okay.
You know, you used to be called Please Cakes, right? Now you've got Please. What happened with that? Why did you do it? And were there any kind of branding challenges associated with you doing that and making that move?
So yeah, I launched Please Cakes was the original name of the brand, and I've still got the notepad on my desk in my office from December 2016, and I was jotting these ideas down, trying to create this really, really basic business plan, and Please Cakes, I was making these cheesecakes obviously, and Please Cakes was the word that kept coming into my head, and was I've got these notes, that's pages and pages of notes of Please Cakes. So that was the first, like, I had no input on that. That was purely through myself. I used Canva to design the logo, and that kind of launched it. And that was specific to cheesecakes. Please Cakes was the cheesecakes kind of connection.
Yeah.
But as it grew, we kind of diversified the product range, you know. The truffles, these cheesecake filled truffles came in, then freeze cakes came in, and we were doing like a multitude of different products. So the decision wasn't solely mine. It was actually a friend or non-exec actually on the board currently who was like, you need to rename it, Please. It's like, it's an emotive word. Mm-hmm. And owning that emotion is great for marketing. Like you can do so much with it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of our overarching brand now. So Please, the overarching brand, similar to like many other brands out there, like Cadbury's. And they've kind of got all their other subsidiary brands off of that. Mm-hmm. We've got freeze cakes. We'll still use Please Cakes, and when we reintroduce the cheesecakes, so it's kind of just our holding company, the main brand of the business. And it was the transition from Please Cakes to Please wasn't like super challenging. It was an obvious route to go down. It wasn't like we needed to do a complete rename or rebrand. We kept the font style for the main brand, and then again we outsourced that process. So we work with a small agency called Zap, who have done a ton of other brands, sort of really sort of other challenger brands. They've done like Nix and Cakes. Ooh. Typical. Nix and Kicks, they've done Hippies, they've done a few other sort of cool brands and their rebrands. And I think for us, everything was designed in-house previously. So I actually used an iPad. And I used to I did a lot of the design work initially. There's like this kind of graffiti, urban sort of connection that I had from painting and decorating that I brought into Please Cakes or Please now. And I used to hand it over to Dan, who's our head of content, and he used to like do this basic sort of put it onto these net layouts, and then we used to sort of print the packaging. And then Laura came in and refined it further. She's a graphic designer. Mm. And then we got to a point where like, okay, we're about to launch into retail. And this was last year, 2022, when we outsourced it. And we're like, we need a bit of input with this process to really make it brand ready and just tone of voice, really capture the tone of voice of the brand, making sure the pack is legit, legally, like with the pack copy and the legalities behind it. And we went through a process of that. It was an exercise of like, what is the tone of voice? What is the brand about? And we got to this point. There was variations of this. Obviously, Please is the logo, and then the freeze cakes is our lead product. And we wanted something that we could scale and distribute across all the other products that we eventually bring in. So this is where we are now. I really like it. It's kind of like a little bit chaotic. It's not super refined. I think it looks different to a lot of products on the shelf.
Yeah.
We were advised against it. Some buyers actually that I'd spoke to previous, like, were like, this doesn't really make sense. And a lot of desserts are like dark or they're like black packaging or like kind of like that indulgent, like, sort of, I don't know. And we kind of wanted to step outside the box with the brand inside of things. So, I kind of like it. I think it really puts our personality into it and looks good on the shelf.
Awesome. An interesting point that you sort of mentioned there, which I wanted to draw out a bit, was that you started off as a painter. So I wanted to rewind a little bit, actually, and just start with the origin story of Please or Please Cakes, because you've talked about a lot of growth, a lot of learning over the last few years. But originally, you know, one guy who's painting goes like, I'm going to do a cheesecake business. How does that happen?
A really odd process, you know. It's definitely not the norm. And the way it started was my dad, I think it was 2015, like, he made a cheesecake and at home, just like for a Sunday dinner. After Sunday dinner, he made a cheesecake.
As you do,
you know, like you make a dessert now and again. It wasn't normally a cheesecake, it was normally something else, like an apple crumble he normally made. But it was a cheesecake this week, and it was okay, you know. I don't know why it sparked an interest. I think it was because it's easy entry into baking. Like, with no baked cheesecakes, there's less accuracy needed to produce the product. It's a case of a mixture of ingredients and kind of like set it off, rather than baking things where you have to be much more precise. And I thought, okay, yeah, I'll give that a go. You know, that was really it. That was the catalyst for me to start. And I started making them on a fairly regular basis, maybe once or twice a month. Friends and family, birthdays, anniversaries, whatever it was. Awesome. And They were rubbish. I mean, their products were rubbish.
We're going to find out soon if they are still rubbish, by the way.
Yeah, they might. I hope not. But we've come a long way. But yeah, I couldn't get the base off the tin, and it was just, I just enjoyed doing it. You know, I love food. I love being creative, and that combination was like perfect for me. You know, I was like, this is a bit of me.
Cool.
And I did it over about a 2-year period. So I got to about late 2016. When I had this notepad in my bedroom at my parents' house, and I was just like jotting down these notes and this idea, and I thought, look, I'm going to set up an Instagram account and try and sell a few cakes every single month, like 4 or 5 large cakes. These are like large, overloaded cheesecake, which was our USP at that stage. They were kind of generic cheesecakes, a little bit boring, a little bit flat, a little bit dated. Kind of revived it in that sense. Very Instagrammable, like very visual.
Yeah.
And so I set up an Instagram account, and that was the start of a mad journey that I've been on over the last six and a half years, and didn't plan it. I literally had that notepad, and
do you still have it?
I've still got it sitting on my desk currently. We're just moving units actually, but I've still got that original notepad that I refer to it, and I share it on social media sometimes just for nostalgic reasons, and it's just quite inspirational where we started, I think. It kind of progressed from there, and it was a mad journey, and I didn't plan this at all. And that's one thing that I think in hindsight I would have liked to have done a little bit more, just a little bit more planning before launch, because we launched, one of my friends has got a large following who kind of gave it a nudge at the start.
Right.
And that sounds really good, and I speak about this quite a lot, like it sounds really good to get that exposure straight away, but the position I was in, I had nothing.
Weren't ready.
I was still in my parents' kitchen operating. No, I had no health and safety accreditations. Mm. I had no supply chain. I had no units to operate. I had nothing. Mm. Nothing in place apart from an Instagram account and a few tins in the cupboard, you know. So it was I chucked in the deep end is probably an understatement with that. You know, I knew there was an opportunity. I saw an opportunity, and I was like, I'm gonna just go for it and see where it takes me. And I think that was the start of this roller coaster. Again, is like an understatement, but yeah, the start of everything.
And when you got this nudge on social media, you saw this influx of interest and presuming orders, like what did you say to these customers? Did you just find a way to just get it done and get these cheesecakes made, or did you say, hey, sorry, there might be a bit of a delay here, or was it just...
No, I was kind of a yes man at that stage. You know, I didn't have a website, I didn't have an email account. I didn't have a bank account registered. I didn't have a company registered. It wasn't a registered company. It was an Instagram account. That was all it was. So I was taking orders through DMs initially.
Yeah.
And I had to act quickly. So the next day of this shout out, I was like, there was an influx of messages. I had to set up a very basic Squarespace website for me, an email account. I had to find a kitchen. Luckily, one of our friends down at Blacksburgs in Epsom was like, there was a burger place and they didn't operate in the mornings, obviously. So we used their kitchen for a few mornings a week.
Wow. Sunday, yeah.
Went back to Brendan, who was my business partner in the painting company. He jumped over to the cakes for a year and helped me. We used his flat for a couple of weeks. And then I found a shared kitchen in Croydon where we started operating out of. And that was the sort of our first establishment. And we stayed there for a year. But it was hectic and it was just really odd process. The one person that came on at that early stage was a guy called Ian Campbell, who I'm forever grateful. He was the ex-production manager of Greg's Bakery.
Right.
So he was managing like 200 staff and a massive production line. Mm. So his knowledge and wealth of like production efficiency to health and safety was like sweet. And he came on for basically the first year as well.
Oh, Sandy, yeah.
So yeah, it was a bit of an odd process.
Have you seen the TV series The Bear? Have you seen that?
No.
He's obsessed with it at the moment. Yeah. He'll find any reason to bring it up.
Watch it, you'll like it. The Bear, it's, I think it's on HBO, is it?
I don't know. You're watching
Disney. It's on Disney. Something like that. Anyway, it's a TV show. It's really, really good. And it's about a famous chef. And there's a scene in it where they accidentally leave the pre-orders on. And it's just absolute chaos. I'm just envisioning your situation kind of being quite similar. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, go watch it.
Yeah, it sounds
really,
good.
Really, really cool.
Well, I had the first cash. It was cash payment. So I met the first client and He came to the kitchen like maybe like 6 months or a year ago, whatever. And I met him in like a pub car park and just like swapped the money, like proper dodgy stuff. I was like, cheesecake money. And obviously it grew from there. We got a bank account and kind of like we learned on the job. So
that's nice.
Awesome. Okay. And now you've got, like you said, separate versions or parts of the business. Talk to me about Freeze Cakes and how they compare to ice cream, which is such a massive market. Maybe about your plan to take over the ice cream market or how you guys compete against them?
So Freeze Cakes was an idea back in March of 2017. So it was 3 months after launching Please Cakes. We used to freeze down the large cheesecakes for stability in transit.
Right.
And I tried one of the cheesecakes when they were frozen. I was like, this is a bit different, tastes a bit different. I was like, how can we create a product out of this? So there's early photos. We wanted to create a choc ice. So I was using like these little molds and creating little cheesecake, frozen cheesecake bars, covering them in chocolate. And that was the concept initially. But it was the same recipe as the cakes. And obviously directly from frozen, they were quite too hard. It wasn't like in a block. And it kind of got shelved. Everything else took off, you know, the big cakes, the mini cakes, the truffles. And it only came back into our sort of focus in March of 2020, like when COVID kind of struck kind of thing. And it was like, how do we develop this? And we put it into a pot, you know, that was going to be the obvious, most efficient way into entry into this, you know, creating bars was going to be a bit more complex. So developed the recipe, made it more scoopable. That was a big challenge initially,
yeah.
Very handmade. And the product is cheesecake. You know, we speak about this quite a lot. It's not cheesecake flavored ice cream. It's much denser. It's like 11% aerated ice cream, maybe.
It's got the cream cheese.
Yeah, we start with cream cheese. So 40% of that product is cream cheese.
Yeah, right.
Like it's not ice cream. Like we speak about that a lot.
Yeah.
And there, so ice cream is much more aerated. So it melts quick. If you took the packaging off, ice cream would just melt into a puddle. Cheesecake, the cheesecake like kind of stands up.
Right.
Very, very different. Obviously, in a similar format, it sits in frozen desserts. It doesn't sit in ice cream category currently.
Okay.
And that's where the opportunity sort of presented itself for us, because frozen dessert, as you probably know, it's kind of a in decline category. It's a very dated category. You've got the vignettes in there, you've got your jam roly-polies, your apple strudels. It's all a bit samey across all the retailers.
Yeah.
And we thought, look, this is the dessert. It's the actual format is very different to what's in that category. There's not much tub in that category, pint size in that category. It's an older demographic. It's very seasonal, the sales. And we thought, look, we can go in there, try and change that. That's where the opportunity. Ice cream's a much more competitive category. Yeah. You've got the big players in there. It's saturated. Although we are looking at maybe doing a bit of testing in that category.
Mm.
We are battling ice cream. You know, we're trying to get a bit of market share from ice cream. We're trying to nick people over. It is the first format for Freeze Cakes. That's not the only format. So we're going to put it into different formats as well. It's a case of trying to build that exposure, that younger demographic, all year round sales, and just bring innovation into that category, bring newness, and that's what we're all about, is just bringing something different to desserts, you know?
Awesome, and you're talking about exposure a lot here. Obviously, a massive part of that is a social media following, which you've accrued over this time, but also, you know, you made the appearance on Dragon's Den. Is that, a lot of people talk about that as a marketing stunt. What was it for you, and how does that help exposure?
It was back in 2018 that was, so I was actively looking then for investment. So that was about a year and a half into the journey, starting the company. And I was in another kitchen in Yule Village, an army base, a tiny kitchen, similar size to this room, trying to operate out of supplying Selfridges and whatnot. And I needed to scale, I needed my own space, I needed a walk-in fridge and freezer. And I thought that was the best route for us, is to scale up manufacturing for us. And actually, maybe in hindsight, again, probably wasn't the right decision. But I was actively looking for investments. So I was going out. I started to explore crowdfunding. I got a call in February that year from one of the producers of Dragon's Den saying, do you want to come on?
So they found you?
Yeah, they contacted us. And I sort of ummed and ahed about it a little bit, and I didn't know if it was the right decision. It really exposes everything, especially a year and a half old brand.
Yeah.
It will expose all the sort of the faults and the flaws of the business, you know. So I didn't know if it was the best route for us. Did it, obviously, went through the process. They do obviously a big check to make sure you're legit and it's not just a marketing stunt.
Yeah.
And it was a super scary, it was intense. I'm completely at that stage I'm completely out of my comfort zone. 18 months ago, I was painting and decorating on building sites, rubbing down skirtings and all that sort of stuff. And now I'm sitting in the Dragon's Den trying to pitch a food brand. You know, it was kind of really intense, quite overwhelming. And I was in there for 2 hours. It's like a 2 hour pitch. You know, you stand there for 2 hours, they grill you. It's not just that 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, it's a long time, you know. And it was a positive feedback. Got the offer from Tuukka Suliman, rubbish offer. Mm. You walk in, you don't speak to them previously.
Mm.
You have that obviously 2 hour conversation, and then you walk out and never see them again.
And you've got to make a decision in
there. You have to go and stand at the wall at the back.
And, no, I did, yeah.
Yeah, like, but I knew at that early stage I knew where I could take the brand, and giving away 35% of the company for 50 grand, I knew wasn't a good deal.
Yeah.
I thought it was, I think, even at that stage. So, although it did, that marketing piece was really key. Grew our following huge, and propelled us the brand further. Although, again, in hindsight, I was 18 months old. I had no ordering system on the website, so you had to order manually via email.
Mm.
Right.
I had no UK-wide distribution, so I could only offer product delivered in a 50-mile radius.
Oh, wow.
So I wish it happened now. Yeah, I actually wish it happened now. Although it did grow us on social, it wasn't probably the right time.
Interesting. Yeah, it's almost like that same problem you had at the beginning with this influx of potential customers. How do you actually solve that and supply it to them all?
Yeah, couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, talking about supplying, that led me on really nice. Thanks for that, Theo. So you've been on this growth journey. What's up?
Oh, good. Okay. Sorry to distract everyone. Do you mind getting the cheesecakes?
We're doing a taste
now.
Why you're waving at me. We're going to get the cheesecakes now, just in preparation.
That can go on bloopers. I'm just waving my arms all over the room.
I couldn't bring the chocolate because there's no Waitrose locally. Obviously, I travel on trains. So I can't bring them on the train.
Right, yeah.
So Carp only stocked the two flavours. The double chocolate is my...
Is it, yeah?
My favourite one, actually.
I'm excited to try. Yeah. Anyway, we can get stuck into this growth journey question.
Sorry.
Well, you talked about Co-op, Waitrose, really big supermarkets around the UK. How did that come about, that whole process? And was it on the roadmap to be kind of getting stocked in these kind of places?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, the complexities from direct to consumer were just never ending. You know, it's to trying to distribute temperature controlled products across the country is really costly. You've got dry ice, you've got polystyrene box, you've got couriers, you've got everything like that, and it's just, you couldn't buy just one tub of freeze cakes on through our website. You had to buy three tubs because of the all the other costs involved in it.
Right.
So really inaccessible for a lot of people. You're spending like 20-30 quid for three tubs of freeze cakes. No, not a lot of people are going to do that, or not the, the masses aren't going to do that. So I knew that for a food brand, we had to get into retail to try and scale, make it much more accessible. Although we had to sort our manufacturing prior to that to make sure that we could supply health and safety accreditations, etc., because you have to have certain to supply retail, obviously. So yeah, it was obviously a process that we had to transition to, and retail was always on the map. You know, I think that, but COVID struck and it was really hard to get in because everything stopped. It was a really hard process. So we were going to go in a number of years ago. That kind of got pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And we only recently been in about 5 months now. So
how many stores are there now?
So almost 1,000 stores across, across both of the retailers. So
yeah,
amazing.
It's huge.
It is, but it's not, based on like rates of sale, it's not as big as, we need more distribution really to achieve economy of scale.
Yeah.
I think that's really important to understand for a lot of brands. I think that it's all well and good going into the supermarket, but it's a brutal industry. You need to hit certain rates of sale to stay in, to stay listed, and also just to achieve efficiencies at manufacturing level. You know, I think that's really key. And currently, we're just below where we need to be. But obviously, we're in a position to scale now, which is obviously really important.
And what do you do if you're... if you see that you're just below that kind of threshold, what can you do as a brand to try and push increase in sales and that? Do you have much power and control of that? Obviously, there's the usual stuff of online marketing and all this stuff.
But we've done, so all sales have come through organic social media currently. We've done a bit of POS, like promotion. So you have to agree to a certain amount of promotion throughout the year at a bit of price off. But all the sales have come organically, and we've done that on zero marketing budget, basically. And for us now, we're going through another round of investment to really fund this properly, which I think is really key. It hasn't been funded properly, the brand, and that's a risky, it's exposed, we're exposed, the risk is exposed. So I think marketing is, and brand awareness, if you've got your manufacturing capabilities set up, your brand's kind of strong, you've got a good product. I think the main area is customer acquisition outside of social media and marketing. So yeah, digital marketing, but not just like a blanket approach in terms of just like radius around stores. I'm talking about like granular, very granular geographical, like what, who is buying in these shops, and are they buying this type of product? Are they buying premium? Really trying to refine that digital marketing piece is really key for us now, I think. Because we haven't got that capability. Sampling, getting the products into people's mouths is super important for us. We've only got the big tubs at the moment, so it's really hard for us to sample. Guerrilla marketing and it is obviously key, and just making that noise as a brand. So they're our main pillars.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about if you had the smaller tubs then.
We're working on it, but again, it's like huge investment at the factory level. For machinery.
Yeah.
So we got a proof concept and of this first, and then we can like diversify the format.
Yeah. Totally. Well, shall we give them a go, Charles?
We're getting to the tasting time.
They are quite soft.
So note for everyone at home, they belong in the freezer, not the fridge. We had a fridge available, so we went with it.
Yeah.
But that's good.
So we got lemon and raspberry.
Lemon and raspberry, butterscotch and caramel. There is a third. But no Waitrose local to me here.
You got two butterscotch caramels, so...
Yeah, I bought two of each.
Oh, okay.
That's why
one Madden's four. Hiding one off camera. He snuck one away. They look too good. All right, should we tuck in?
Yeah, I will get some close-ups of the products as well. Stick it in a video, but these look amazing. I love the design on this, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm really into bright, you know, colourful pops out.
Yeah, on our original pots, I didn't even have the word cheesecake on it.
Oh, really?
That's how naive we were, and this obviously part of the branding exercise and working with someone experienced is understanding how that pack is read on in retail, where it sits on the shelf. It's been a process.
Some of your own cheesecake.
How many times a day do you eat it?
I've got a chest freezer full of it, so everyone digs in at work, basically.
Oh, awesome.
I'm gonna go for the butterscotch caramel first.
Gotta dig down. There's sauce in there, there's biscuit.
Oh. I'm gonna zoom in on your face, so make sure you exaggerate everything.
I'm gonna pull a weird face because I'm really bad with cold stuff. My teeth is like really sensitive.
Oh, yes. Well, maybe you've gone too big there.
You reckon?
Oh, no. I'm gonna struggle. Have you got sensitive teeth?
Oh. Mm. This one is. I'm going lemon and raspberry. Ooh. Ooh. Cold.
It's frozen. Freeze cake, huh?
Well, there you go. It shows that even if you do keep them in the fridge for a couple of hours, as you were mentioning before, I suppose, ice cream would have gone by now, right?
Yeah, you can eat these chilled. You can defrost them.
It's very much like it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's dense.
It tastes way different. Not, they taste different from ice cream, definitely.
Yeah, it's denser, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
This one's nice, yeah.
I like this one. Mm. Let's try this. Martin, what do we think off camera?
That's tremendous. Trippy right now.
He's loving it. Excellent. He's just literally sitting in a corner taking pictures of us eating freeze cakes.
This is right on my street.
You got a
whole
tub, yeah. Straight from the tub.
So it's kind of layered, right?
Yeah, it's kind of swirled. Look, with this is the first sort of build up. This is not like the final build up. Well, we want to do so many more things with the product. We want to increase the biscuit size. We want to put layers in there. We can put two sauces in there. This is like version one.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You never launch with something that's completely perfect, and I think there's definitely room for to expand the sort of build up of the product, which we're really excited about.
Awesome. Can I ask what your favorite flavor is out of the three?
Out of the three, unfortunately, it's double chocolate.
Okay, which you're not here.
Which
that's,
is not
that's
here,
okay.
But it's a real good.
Don't say it yet. I can see you're about to say it. I'm thinking. Tell us, and then we've got a game to play.
Okay.
Your favourite, sorry.
My favourite is the double... Out of these two or the double chocolate?
Out of these two.
Out of these two. Ugh. That's a hard one. I think it's also weather dependent, you know, lemon raspberry in the sun.
Strange.
And butterscotch more in the winter.
Yeah.
For me, lemon and raspberry.
Okay. Can you count us down, and we're going to say it at the same time?
From five, three.
Whatever you feel.
Five, four... 3, 2,
lemon raspy.
Lemon raspy. You did the wrong time. But
you went late, I went early. Far out.
Yeah, this is the raspberry is just next level. Like that kind of, I don't know what it's like, syrupy, jammy kind of thing. It's real nice.
That was 10 out of 10. I also do like the butterscotch caramel, to be honest. But I agree with what you're saying. It's more of a wintery vibe. And I'm feeling happy summery vibes today.
Nice. Hold on to summer, eh?
It is.
But yeah, if you get a I'll send you some vouchers, but the double chocolate is like... It's chocolate cheesecake, chocolate sauce, just chocolate. It's like proper, if you like chocolate, obviously.
Yeah.
Really good Belgian chocolate. Just delicious. Really, really good.
Awesome. Well, I'm afraid they're going to melt and we're not going to get to enjoy them on the table. But
they don't melt like that.
They don't melt. They're not ice cream.
You can have it chilled. So.
Awesome. I'll put the lids back on and we'll get back to the real questions about retail.
Let's do it.
Thank you for bringing them in.
Yeah.
No worries.
Appreciate it.
Certain.
Sure. So, You're trading at a much higher volume. You talked a little bit about, you know, having to scale, things like that. If you could pick out like one or two of the biggest challenges you had from like scaling up that business, making that big step, what were they?
Firstly, finding the manufacturer. Mm. I think that was the biggest challenge because we went to ice cream manufacturers who could pot it in that format, but they couldn't make the product because it's too viscous. Mm. We went to frozen dessert manufacturers who could make the mix, but couldn't pot it.
Right.
So luckily we found a manufacturer in Belgium called Galana through our partners Ice Fresh, who were willing to invest in a bespoke production line for us.
Wow.
So it's that was extremely lucky. They invested a lot of money, millions of pounds into this production line to be able to create freeze cakes. And then it was the challenge of recipe development. You know, these pots we used to make by hand. So we used to have a piping bag, make the cheesecake mix in a mixer, use a spatula, put it into our piping bags, pipe a bit of cheesecake in, pipe a bit of sauce in, put some crumb in, and then repeat the process for every single pot.
Really?
Hand lid them, hand crate them, put them in the freezer by hand. Everything was quite done by hand. So very manual, you know.
Yeah.
To try and then replicate that quality in a fully automated production line was a huge challenge. So we went through about, I don't know, 400 or 500 different samples to get to this point. And there's still obviously that room to increase capabilities and improvements and whatnot. But that was a huge challenge, you know, to replicate that mouthfeel, the scoopability, and getting it through the mix. You know, there are competitors out there that use 9% cream cheese.
Right.
As their as well, it's not a lead ingredient, but if there's it's cream cheese is not the lead ingredient, you know, so that was key for us. If we're trying to create a frozen cheesecake product, cream cheese needs to be the lead ingredient.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that was a hard process, and that's taken a number of years. I'd say a couple of years to bring it to market.
Awesome. Were you having to travel a lot during that process to the manufacturing side?
Yeah. And, yeah. Yeah, to Belgium. So I actually go back out next week, 4th and 5th, so to work on two new flavours and different formats and territory expansion as well.
Very cool.
Out of curiosity, I mean, that's obviously not in the UK, right? Does that raise its own challenges considering you're manufacturing the product in Europe?
Hasn't done. No, yeah, hasn't been an issue as of yet. Icefresh, our partners, work with these sites on a regular basis, and they bring a lot of products that they bring into the UK in all the supermarkets come from the EU.
Okay.
So yeah.
Cool.
And just to ask a question on that as well, you chose. You're manufacturing in Europe because that's where it happened to be the right partner for you. Okay, you didn't say I want to.
No, in Europe. No, it was just a challenge to find one partner who could produce this product.
Okay,
we could have tried to scale up internally, and I would have had to raise a ton of money, multi millions of pounds, to set up a factory with bespoke machinery in. Hire a ton more people, invest in like health and safety accreditations to be able to supply supermarkets, or go down the route of brand, MPD, social media, and just be obviously being very heavily involved in that MPD process and that creative process with new flavors. And I think that's where we sit much better, and just working with some incredible partners that are established, that are set up, they've got a wealth of experience in manufacturing. I think that was key for us.
Awesome. No, that's perfect. Going away now from the supply chain and more towards selling again, when we talk about previously in this podcast, even we're talking about your D2C channel, sort of as how you started even taking orders through WhatsApp, and now you're obviously very much B2B, selling into stockers. Is there still a D2C function within your business?
There's not currently, but I would like an omni-channel approach. I think D2C is... If we can get it right, obviously we were producing the product in-house and it was much more inefficient for us to do it. But there are fulfillment centers out there that maybe you'll be able to do that. Although it's going to be a high cost, we're not going to be able to achieve the commercials of retail. So you're not going to be able to buy it for £5. It might be more expensive. But then it's the convenience of getting it delivered direct to your door. You know, I think that might be key. It's a really easy route for us, for our social medias. Like we just plug in a link and it goes straight to basket, you're purchasing. So like the route, the journey for customer experience is so much more fluid rather than getting someone up off the sofa out of their house and they come down to retail. It's a little bit easier in that sense, but not cost wise. So look, I think there's definitely room to reintroduce, and we are exploring it currently actually to bring it back in, but not as of yet. We need to establish ourselves in retail and just increase that distribution. And we are working on other products as well that are not frozen. I think that's key. If we want to open up that channel again, I think it needs to be ambient or something that's easier, or even chilled, but that needs to be distributed, that can be distributed D2C.
Yeah, I was going to say, surely food and bev in general is a difficult industry to distribute D2C, but especially when you're talking about specific temperatures, very frozen stuff.
Yeah, really hard. Dry ice in itself is obviously slightly dangerous to handle and costly, like really costly. So you can't, dry ice, you can't keep in a freezer. You have to have it delivered on a daily basis and you have to store it in vats, and it's a bit of a process,
right?
D2C. Yeah.
Do
you think something like a subscription model is anything you'd ever consider, or do you think it would work with your products or not?
Yeah, I think definitely. I don't know about freeze cakes.
Yeah.
I think freeze cakes, especially this format, I think it just sits in retail perfectly, or food service or travel. There's other sectors we can push it into, but for a subscription model, I'm not sure. There's maybe some other products in our pipeline that would suit that better.
Yeah.
But I think a subscription model is a great asset. So if you can crack subscription, it's just like reoccurring, isn't it? It's a great thing to have as a brand, especially a young brand.
Yeah, and like you say, it's just from your side, getting the right product that fits that
you want on a day to day, but it's probably not an everyday item. So yeah, there's a brand that I actually, there's only one subscription that I currently have, and that's with Moju. You know, like the turmeric and ginger shots. Yeah. And I have that on subscription because it's a daily product, so it makes sense. You get a discount rather than buying it every from the supermarkets, and that kind of just makes sense. It's something that works with subscription.
It's funny you mentioned that. I actually was really close to buying one of those shots this morning and saying
yes.
Yeah.
And we did the podcast with another turmeric shot brand called the Turmeric Co.
Okay.
In this season. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
That's actually one subscription I wish in Spain they had was a turmeric shot. It's quite, it's growing, becoming quite popular in the UK.
Yeah.
There's a couple popping up here and there, and I think it's great as a daily product.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I don't know. It's only been like a matter of weeks, so I'm not sure if I see the benefits.
You're glowing today.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know. I do feel. Does it help? I don't know. Is it a fad? Is it a.
Maybe.
I don't know. There's a lot of studies about it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
We'll see.
See if you feel better.
Yeah. So talking about growth, you've talked about potential more channels, potentially other products. Obviously, expanding into new markets is surely something you guys are considering, right? Europe now on the doorstep, especially with your manufacturers, but also we talked before the podcast bit about the US and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, everyone would love to, right?
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. How's that come about, and how long do you think it's going to take to do those things?
That's how long is a piece of string? I think the UK market, the retail market in the UK, is probably the hardest in the world. Like, it's one of the hardest markets to crack.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think just diversifying that territory into Europe is probably our obvious route to support the UK market as well as we grow. Understanding the opportunities in each market is something that we haven't covered yet. Like, we don't really know where the biggest opportunity lies. We've got connections in across Europe, but it's just understanding where we go first. The US is obviously, it works very differently. Mm. Like the way the US works with distribution and the retail side of things, and it's a much bigger challenge, you know. And I think again that will need to be heavily funded. Heavily
and researched, as you mentioned.
And researched, you know. But if we can do it, I think we've had a lot of interest from the US, from distributors, and from the general public.
Mm.
I get calls quite regularly from just a random person in LA, like, hey, where can we get the frozen cheesecakes from? We're not out there yet. But yeah, definitely on the agenda. I think in terms of timeline, I would say Europe within the next year, hopefully next year. The US, I would say within the next two.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Awesome.
Depending on.
Well, given your answer and the amount that needs to go into that, obviously those timelines aren't that super far off. So it's super exciting times for Please, obviously, for sure. So, you know, we were just talking about manufacturing. When should brands be thinking? We spoke before about, and during the podcast, about all the things that went into it for you guys, from handmade to automating, and the massive teams that you would have to have in-house to make that function work. When should brands be considering it?
I think it's the route that you're going to go down. So if you wanted to go into retail with your brand, you need to understand the variables that are required to get in there. So the number one thing is health and safety. Like, a retailer is going to require a BRC accreditation, which is the highest accreditation for food manufacturing. You know, huge, hard to get, really, really hard to get. It's a very, very, very detailed audit and process to get a BRC accreditation. You need maybe 5 or 6 people, permanent staff members working on that. Huge, tens of thousands of pounds of investment to ensure your facility is up to that spec. So it's a big step.
Yeah.
To get that, and then you've got the investment into the machinery and the plantation and whatever it is, the site. So if you are looking to scale up, and that doesn't mean you can't bring it back in house later down the line, which is what a lot of brands do, but to entry into retail, you need to look for a manufacturing partner. I think that's the really key, and a ton of people in retail now don't manufacturing themselves.
Yeah, no, of course.
And bringing it back in-house, like you said, does that, obviously if you're at a size, does that kind of improve profit margins by doing that? Is that the
end? Yeah, that's obviously the goal, is to improve the margin. But it's higher risk. It's higher risk. Yeah. You need to be in a position where you know you've got this reoccurring revenue across the world that you can afford to bring it in house again. So yeah, entry into retail specifically, it's all about outsourcing it and finding the right partner. But you've got to be detailed and thorough with who you work with, you know, because this is, you're putting your whole brand and all these years that you've worked on it into someone else's hands, and you, they're at risk as well. And you know, so it's a risky transition to scale up. It's really hard to scale up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of being calculated and just weighing up the options of.
Yeah.
And you're really happy with your partner, obviously. You made a, I sound like a stalker saying this. You made a post, I think, earlier this week on LinkedIn
about like
how you like them. You've talked about here how they literally invested a bunch of money in making sure that you could produce what you needed to.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think that's super, super key to find the right partner that believe in the product. Mm. You need that belief, you know. I think unless you get it, if they look at it just from a cash profit perspective and just want to like churn it out and just make money and not really get it, build a relationship with you, then they're probably not the right partner. So we've been fortunate enough to find an incredible partner or partners with our manufacturing, the manufacturing side of things, husband and wife owned. Previously, it's been bought by a big group now, but believed in the brand, believed in the product, like the social media, and just thought there was a real opportunity to invest in this machinery to bring it to life, you know. And without that, we wouldn't be, we'd be struggling to find a manufacturer.
And just going into that, you said obviously you're a bit Spanish. I'm taking a couple of steps back here, but because you've got those contacts with that with the manufacturer in Belgium, does that help? Do they have contacts to help you then enter that market? Do you think? Do you reckon that helps you having a manufacturing partner in Europe, that they might have some contacts to help you then expand into there?
Well, it wasn't, so they're purely a manufacturer.
Yeah.
Although they do have some connections with other territories that they supply to, but it's our other partner, Ice Fresh Food, who are kind of, they're owned by another group as well, but they do a lot of own label products for a lot of the supermarkets over here, and they'll put all that NPD through all these sites that they've got connections with. Mm. Ice Fresh help us with the sellings and presentations to the retailers as well. So they'll have connections already with all their other products they put in there.
Mm.
We present data and the case study to these buyers, and then hopefully get the listing. They kind of co-manage this process.
Mm. Moral of the story is partnerships are super important in any case.
Yeah, I think so. I think especially at early stage entry level into retail, like where I've got no experience, where I've never done this before, you know. So I think it was really key to just be around good people that have got experience, you know. I think that if I didn't have that, we wouldn't be there. We previously did a bit of retail on a much smaller level, like we used to supply Selfridges, we used to supply Amazon Fresh Stores and a few other places, and it's complex managing those sort of things. So we didn't have any account managers in house, and it was just, we'd make mistakes, and it was just, it's always better to work with someone who's got a bit of experience.
For sure.
I suppose it's probably, we're coming towards the end of our time in the space, so thank you for coming on. We always do this kind of question at the end, which is, what's your favourite retail brand at the minute? Who are you liking at the minute in the space?
I think the one that I'm going to lean in towards is the one that I've just subscribed to.
Yeah. I thought you might go that way, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just I've kind of the story that they're a real challenger brand, I think. I'm liking the format, you know, the way they've created this format of, it's not just a single use shot part, it's like a multi-shot part and stuff like that. Yeah, I think Moja is like my new little brand that's on the go. But in terms of other brands that I look up to that have done some good stuff in frozen desserts specifically, the obvious one for me is Little Moons, who've just, there's kind of a bit of synergy with utilizing social media. They kind of blew up on TikTok, really captured an audience. It was innovative in the UK. And just created their own category, you know, I think in terms of ice cream. So, like, hats off to them. I think they've done really well, and they continue to grow. They're a real sort of inspiration. And I think it was his brother and sister. Is it brother and sister? I'm not sure.
We'll go with
I've
that.
Done a, I've done a, I've
it's
done
the
a,
brother and sister.
I think it's brother and sister. Yeah. And sort of ex Barclays, and ex JP Morgan, but I think they manufacture in house over here in Park Royal. And just an incredible story. Been going like 12 years, and just it'll be incredible to kind of replicate their success at some level. So yeah,
Brilliant. Great answers. Great answers. So I guess to wrap things up, where can people find more about Please? Websites, socials, all that stuff.
Please, www.please.com, obvious. Okay. Socials, Please, at Please. TikTok, at Please. LinkedIn, at Please. Everything Please, yeah, all awesome. Please, yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning that it's Please with a double E.
Yeah, that was an amateur one. And obviously, if you want to buy them in Co-op and Waitrose, there's a store located on our website.
Yeah.
So you can just punch in your postcode and it will show you your nearest store.
There's awesome. No excuses then, because I've been on that and there's heaps of stores where you can get this product, so there's no excuse.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you to everyone for joining us for this episode of WTFS Retail. Thank you to Joe for joining us especially. If you want to find out more about Excellent Zephyr, myself and Harry, you can find out at www.excellentzephyr.com. We are integration, ERP, and automation specialists for retail brands. See you next time. Thanks very much.